up any questions and concerns. So I thank you for coming in on such a beautiful night. I know there are a lot of other places that you'd rather be than here. Just introductory comments. No decisions are being made at the town hall meetings tonight. So this is strictly for council to receive input from residents on what our residents think and feel. That's exactly why the city council is here. We're here to listen and to take notes. The purpose of the meeting is for residents to make comments and ask questions about the project. So please have your questions and comments ready to go. These are not the formal hearings before the city council to consider the land use applications. Those will take place on June 3rd, so please keep that in mind. However, public participation is encouraged, and the minutes from the May 28th and 29th town hall meetings, those will all be a part of the public record. So we have a person here taking notes. We're also audio recording this, so if anybody wants a copy of the audio recording or the minutes, please contact me. Some more introductory comments. We ask respectfully that comments are concise and that we avoid repetition. We have a full house, and I know that a lot of people want to get their comments in, and also try to limit your remarks to 2 minutes or less, and let's try to keep it as concise as possible. As required, I will direct questions to be answered to our staff members or to Dominium or IOCP, and staff and IOCP or Dominium may need time to research and respond at a later date. If that is the issue, then we will collect either your phone number or your email address, and we will get back to you on your questions. We're going to start off with Dominium. Nick from Dominium is going to come up. He's going to walk through his presentation.
Scott. Well, first of all, my name is Nick Anderson. I'm a senior development associate with Dominium, and I'm really excited to be here tonight. I'm excited at the opportunity to get to talk to everybody about our proposal and hopefully clear up some concerns and definitely, I think, some misconceptions that are out there with this project. So moving on, I've been asked to keep this brief, so I'm going to keep my comments pretty short. And a lot of the detail of the project and the proposal I won't get into right now, but we'll have time for questions and answers, and we can try to get into some of those details later on. But just a quick overview of what I'm going to talk about. I want to introduce Dominium. I want to tell you about who we are and what we do, what our qualifications are. I want to talk a little bit about the proposed housing. I know there's some confusion about what affordable housing actually is and what it means, so I want to clear some of that up and provide some information there. And then I'll talk a little bit about typical residents, who the people are that we would see living in a project of this type, and get into that a little bit. And then
Nick,
lastly...
Can I ask you to have a seat and talk into the mic just to make sure that we're getting that on tape?
So... Lastly, I'll talk a little bit about a recent similar Dominium project that we did back in 2009 that's very indicative of the project that we've proposed here in Medina. I'll show some photos of that project to give you an idea and a feel for what the Medina project will look like and some of the materials that would be used and just, you know, give you a better sense of what it is we're proposing. So as far as who is Dominium, we're an affordable housing owner and operator. We were founded in 1972. Affordable housing is what we do. It's our sole focus. It's all that we focus on. And we don't really dabble in any other type of real estate. So it is our expertise. We're the largest affordable housing owner in Minnesota and the fifth largest in the country. And we're headquartered right in Plymouth, so we're right down the road. This project will be in our backyard. It's easily accessible for our managers and our staff to make sure that we're keeping all eyes on this project. So as far as the proposed housing and the type of housing here, there's been a misconception out there as to whether or not this is Section 8 housing. This is not Section 8 housing. This is a project that will be developed under the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Program. And in its basic sense, what that means is that Dominium's made a commitment to do a couple of different things. First, we're going to limit rents to a certain level, in this case $400 to $1,200, and then income limits for the residents that live at the property will be capped as well. So for a family of four, the income limit's $49,000, and that income limit will go up or down depending on family size. And then lastly, we've made a commitment to be involved and own in this and manage this project for a minimum of 15 years. So, you know, I think that that's an important point to understand, because Dominium isn't going to build this project and then not be around to take care of it. We've made a commitment. We've made guarantees on certain things with our investor that we will be around for 15 years. We'll manage the project for that period of time. And because we have that long-term outlook, we typically put more focus on the front end in making sure that we design a project that is not only durable, but it's competitive in the marketplace, and it really is nice housing. I think a lot of the photos that I show you will sort of speak for themselves there, but there's a lot of amenities associated with this housing. We use durable construction materials, a lot of hardy board siding, brick, durable materials that are going to kind of stand up to the test of time. So, one additional detail or additional restriction associated with this project, in addition to the rent and income limits, is that we've committed to setting aside 4 units for households that have lacked permanent housing. And LaDonna Hoy will speak from IOCP later today. She'll talk more about this piece of it. But Dominium and IOCP have formed a partnership on this project. IOCP will provide support services to help make sure that these households have the resources and the tools that they need to establish stability in the housing. And typically, we see the residents of these units being single mothers with children. We have, as I mentioned, a similar project in Albertville. At that project, we do have 4 of these units, and all 4 are occupied by residents who are single mothers with children. As far as who the typical residents are, first and foremost, I think it's important to understand that Dominium has a very thorough tenant screening process. We really look at 3 things. If you have any type of criminal history whatsoever, you're not allowed into the project. If you have a bad rental history, you have a history of eviction, a history of poor behavior or failure to pay rent, we won't allow you to move into the property. And then lastly, we look at credit score to make sure, both credit score and income, to make sure that you can afford to pay the rent and that you actually qualify to live in the housing based on your income level. As far as who we think will be residents at the proposed project and where they're going to come from, in looking at some stats on demographics for Medina, there are households here in Medina that currently qualify under the income guidelines. There's about 260 households that would fit the income criteria for qualifying for this housing. So there are people that we will draw from Medina itself to move into this project. And if it isn't entirely people from Medina, we expect it to be, you know, neighboring communities like Plymouth, Loretto, Hamel, places like that. In the case of the Albertville project I mentioned, 78% of the residents there moved in from within 10 miles of the property, and we expect that would take place here as well. As far as income level goes, I mentioned the income cap is $49,000 for a household of 4. An average level of income for this type of property would be somewhere in the $36,000 to $38,000 range. Typical household composition is usually a family with children. Usually there's 1 to 3 kids, and typically these households are fully employed. I mean, this is housing that is being made available at, for the most part, rents that range from $850 to $1,200. So to afford that rental range, and we don't allow you to move into the property unless your income exceeds the rent by 2.5 times. So to be able to afford the rent in the majority of the units in this project, you have to have a job. So I've talked a lot about this Albertville project that we completed a few years ago. I thought I'd just quickly spin through some photos to give you an idea of kind of the quality of construction that we use, what that project looked like. And Medina has pretty much been designed after this one, so it will be very similar. So just kind of quickly going through. This one is actually an architectural rendering of the Medina site, so this has been sort of superimposed over the parcel that we're working with, and this is actually laid out as we have proposed to lay out the project. So in summary, you know, I want to thank everybody for giving us the opportunity to come in here and speak to you today. Jeff Huggett is here with me from Dominium as well, and Jeff and I will be available for questions at the end. But, you know, I think the 3 points that I want to leave everybody with are that You know, first and foremost, this is affordable housing tax credit. It's being developed under that program. Really what that means is that we set rent and income limits at the project. And I think between the partnership that's developed here between Dominium and IOCP, we have a uniquely qualified development team. I think with Dominium as the owner and manager, and with our experience in affordable housing, and with IOCP and their expertise in supportive services, I think this has been set up to succeed. And then lastly, Dominium being involved for 15 years and being heavily invested in this project, we've put a lot of attention and focus into making sure that we've designed a high-quality project that will stand the test of time. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Scott. And like I said, we're looking forward to being able to answer any questions and address concerns. So thank you.
We will have an opportunity to address questions after the presentation. Next, we're going to have IOCP, LaDonna Hoy, come up and talk about their portion of the proposed project.
Well, what I want to speak to first of all is the challenge of affordable housing, not just in Medina and Hemel, but also in the 8 West Suburban communities that we serve. This is an issue that we discovered a long while ago is probably the most destabilizing problem that families who use our services face. If you can't have stable, affordable housing, it's very hard to get on track or stay on track with all of the other issues that might be getting in your way or keeping families and individuals out of the mainstream. Barriers like lack of affordable child care, transportation, employment, these are the barriers that families struggle with when they arrive at our doors. And when we can help them be stable in housing, we can then link them with all of the other resources that we provide directly and the partners in community that help them move forward. Last year, for example, we spent over $1,024,000 just keeping people stable in their housing. We provided 1,410 housing assists to upwards of 400 families. And for those families, that was the beginning of their journey with us on moving forward with the other issues that help them move from survive to thrive. The opportunity that we see with this project is not only will it make affordable quality housing available to more families and definitely some families from Medina and the other communities we serve, but it will provide that winning combination of quality housing and the support services that really make a difference for the families we see. We've had experience with this. Another partner that we work with on development of affordable housing is Common Bond Communities. We have worked with them on servicing families who fit Minnesota's definition of homeless very successfully. And as you leave tonight, I left some materials that describe in detail some of the goals and outcomes that we've had in working with families who fit this definition. We are very proud and excited and very grateful, I should say, too, for the support of this community that makes that kind of outcome possible. We've worked with Dominium on a couple of other projects, have been very impressed not only with the quality of their product, but the quality of their property management, and more to the point, their demonstrated commitment to helping tenants be successful, not only as tenants, but successful as families and engaged in the community. This is a wonderful combination. And it's what we look for when we are looking for who we can partner with in terms of providing opportunities for people to find stable and affordable housing. Our approach has been, particularly with the families that we will be providing intensive services for in this development, is to first of all help them with all of the move-in issues, help them get acclimated to the community, make a very careful assessment of need, get them lined up with a case manager who will be providing intensive services 2.5 hours a week that is focused on setting goals depending upon what the issues they have that they need help with. And we are very committed to accountability, primarily because that's what gives people dignity. When we sign on with people for the program of support that we provide these families, we make it very clear this is an opportunity that many people can use. Here are the expectations for you as we move forward, and we hold them accountable to those expectations. We've had great success with people who would not have had this opportunity were it not for this combination of stable housing and supportive services. The impact I can't begin to describe. We're changing futures, folks, helping kids get on a path to success in school who might never have had that opportunity otherwise, helping single moms reframe the way they think about themselves and their futures, giving them the tools they need to be successful. One of the families we are currently working with is ready to become a first-time home buyer. When you can see the possibilities that this combination of safe housing and supportive services make for families, I think you'd be proud to be part of it. Thank you.
Next, we'll have our police chief, Ed Bell, and he's going to walk through some of the information that he was able to compile on police calls.
Okay. Through this process, we received information that people were concerned about the number of police calls and responses to the Dominion projects in other cities compared to what we're looking in Medina. So what we did is we contacted three different cities, Elbertville, Plymouth, and Wayzata, and we asked the Sheriff's Department in Outright County to get us all the police calls to the certain developments, the same with Plymouth and the same with Wayzata. What I found out is everybody uses police services. It doesn't matter what community you're in, what housing development you're in, everybody uses them. And it depends on what development you're in dictates the type of calls you go to. And some of the comparisons, I do have all the whole list of summarized police calls. If somebody would want them, they can contact us, and I'd be able to email them out to you and see the different types of calls. But I had to find a way to compare them, so I put a few slides together with just the total calls for service. And the reason I can't break it up is they vary from assault to criminal to nuisance calls, parking, alarms, medicals, the whole variety of them. So I did it in a couple different ways. I did like units, and I took Gramercy, for example, and this is five-year stats, and the Gramercy building up in Hamel, in the 5 years we have 109 total calls, police calls, and I'll be up front, 80 of those are medicals.
Are these all senior?
But yeah, these three are all senior units.
That really doesn't apply, does it?
It doesn't. I'm just showing you, it's just an example of the comparison I used. And as you can see, I divided the number of calls the number of units into the number of calls on the bottom, just to give some type of comparison, and it's pretty much standard, okay? So we can go to the next slide. And again, comparing units. Now I took the 36 townhomes along Hamel Road that have been there for the last 20 years. And in that time, we've had 102 calls. They got 36 units. And so the Willowwood Department is down by Medicine Lake in Plymouth, and they had 271 calls. They got 40 units in that building. And that might look surprisingly, you know, much higher, over twice the unit calls per unit. But when you examine it, you got a high number of parking issues. And if you've been to that unit down there by Medicine Lake, they have very limited parking. They have no on-street parking. And so a large number of calls are parking calls. So to do a light comparison, it's really hard to say they have more crime because they have a parking complaint and things to that effect. So just an example. The next slide, comparing like units, common bond, and this is another example of, you know, common bonds at 7.5, where our Creekside Apartments, which is down on Hamill Road, just as you're going out of Hamill, it's that brick building as you're going out. And the big difference here is it's an alarm building. Common bond has an alarm building, and I want to say 16 of their 45 calls over a five-year period are alarm calls. In Creekside, there's no alarms. So it comes down to, you know, if the alarms were real, the burglary numbers would be up, theft numbers would be up, and they're not in that example.
Where's Creekside? Is it by Jim Creek?
Yep, that cement building there, oh, okay. the brick building there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and then getting away from like units and looking at numbers of units, we took the Albertville Meadows, which is 112 units total between apartments and townhomes, and they had a total call over the last 5 years of 471 police calls. And if you look down at the bottom, 4.21 calls. And took Wild Meadows, which is a little more units. They have a little more call volume, but again, the calls are so different that it's hard to give you a like example, because of the 605 calls in Wild Meadows, 205 of them are alarm calls, and another 60 are suspicious calls. So it's really hard to compare. And then you take Wild Meadows compared to Cherry Hill Development, and the number drops out the bottom. Of course, Wild Meadows is twice the amount, so if you doubled the amount, you'd be at 3. But Cherry Hill, for some reason, doesn't have any alarms. We have very few alarm calls in Cherry Hill. So it's very difficult to analyze, you know, is the crime rate higher or lower? There's a lot of calls for service throughout this. The best I can give you is that if this development would go forward, I can estimate that we're going to have 30 to 50 new calls in a year, just based on the average across the board from what I've seen. And again, the calls vary from disturbances to theft to, you know, the numbers are somewhat consistent, but it depends on the development you're in. You had a question?
Did you have any comparisons?
Ma'am, can we have you come to the mic if you're going to ask a question?
I can try. It's going to be kind of tight.
Here, we can turn the mic.
There are seats here. There's one here. Can I invite somebody to come here and join us? It's too open.
Is there a comparison between Dominion properties and other properties for amount of calls? Just curious.
As far as in Medina or in, what are you comparing?
In any of these areas that you're talking about, did you compare Dominion properties versus other affordable housing?
The closest we have are the townhomes along Hamill Road.
Are they all Dominion is what I'm asking?
All Dominion?
Are they all Dominion properties or are they other
companies? No, the
companies?
One in Wayzata is a common bond.
Okay.
So the other two that I got data on are Dominion.
And was there a difference? Did you see a difference between Dominion properties and common bond properties?
No. Like I said, the call loads are all over the. I can tell you the type of calls. I don't want to take a ton of time here, but as far as it's Maggie Manor and Wayzata, but they start out with accidents, alarms, animals. Assist, civil, DWI, 911 hang-ups, harassing landlord-tenant issues, medicals, parking, suspicious activity, test practice burns, thefts, threats, vandalisms. In the top one is in Maggie Manor, like I said, it's got 12 alarms.
And that's common bond?
45 calls. Yeah, and that's a common bond.
Okay.
So it's an alarm building. And then you go to compare it to, you know, Creekside Medina, they don't have any alarms. So how many alarms would they have if they did have alarm systems? And so it's difficult to make a real solid comparison. If you go to the bigger developments, you go to the Albertville Meadows, you know, you got the same calls, but the call numbers differ. You know, you got more people, you got people living closer together, so there are disturbance. And some a neighbor's going to call up and say, you know, he's got his stereo too loud. Those are the type of calls we're going to see more of because they're closer together. Like I said, Wild Meadows has a huge number of alarms, but they're not on top of each other where they're not bothering their neighbors as much. They still have their disturbance calls, but the numbers are lower in that.
But isn't that kind of supposition on your part
as far as
why people are calling?
No,
with one company
I can see
versus
them right
another.
Here in the numbers. Sure.
I know, but I'm saying.
I'm just
saying, one company versus another, as far as management goes. You're supposing that because the Albertville unit is Dominion, that they're closer together, so that's why they're getting more calls.
I would assume.
But that's assuming, right?
I would. I'm just looking at the numbers, and the disturbance calls are that much higher. And from my experience as a police chief, I can make that assumption that, you know what, if you're living in an apartment next to an apartment, you're probably going to have more disturbance calls based on living that close.
I've lived at two different companies' homes, and my assumptions would be totally different than yours based on those facts.
Really? Okay.
Can I get your name and address, please?
Sure. My name is Linda Lake, and I live at Willowwood Estates.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Not for very long after this, probably.
There's also a question about the impact of affordable housing on the property values. And the information that the city has received that our planning staff has looked into shows that the various research papers exist on the subject, and summaries are available on the city website. So that information is on our website if you'd like to take a look at that. Research does not commonly find negative impacts to area single-family property values. But, ma'am, we'll have an opportunity for questions. And
regarding the police officer, while he's speaking, I've got a specific police-related
question. Can you please come to a mic?
Hi, I'm Cheryl Golan, 251 Cherry Hill Trail. It just occurred to me as I was looking at, and thank you for your diligence, Officer Bellin, Police Chief Bellin, for doing that. It occurred to me that this was, it's tallying statistics of things that occur on site. Now, I'd like to see some numbers that would be something similar to this right next to retail and right next to a bar and restaurant, because that is the location, and that's something I think that's very unique about this project, I think, which is kind of a big concern, is the specific location right next to retail, right next to shops, restaurants, bars, those type of things. So
Cherry
if
Hill,
you could have some...
Cherry Hill's going to be the best example for that, and we did that. I mean, and the numbers are relatively low, but that,
yes,
that would be the closest, when you're talking the target development in the ballroom, you guys are definitely the closest.
I agree, and I personally know three members of your staff very well, and my children do too, because you've actually had to set up surveillance cameras in our living room because of development behind our property.
And I understand.
You know, and your officers do a great job, but I'd rather meet you guys, you know, asking you to get the cat out of a tree or something instead. Thank you, guys.
And then also the small scale developments, 50 units or less. Dominium's proposing a 32 unit development. The developments tend to show little impacts based on the information that the city has on our website. But if you've come across any studies or have any information, please submit it to me, and I will get that to our planning staff for review. Tax increment financing, this was also a big portion of the concern with this project. The proposed fee waiver is for up to $300,000. This is for water and sewer fees On the utility side, they're not general taxpayer dollars, but they are utilities. The fees would be waived if approved by the city council, and the city would reimburse itself that lost revenue with the tax increment revenue. There are limitations on what tax increment can be used for, but in the event that a project is within those limitations, tax increment can be expended. This project still needs to go through the but-for test, so we are not certain whether or not this project actually can meet that but-for test. That needs to go through our financial advisor, Ehlers. They need to take a look at this first before we can make any determination on this. If Ehlers determines that this is not even a possibility, this isn't even an option for the city.
That's a question on that?
Yes.
Sorry.
Your name and address.
Sure. Chris Hilberg, 4559 Shirleyman Drive in the Bridgewater neighborhood. Just to be clear, the resolution passed by the council said it would waive fees, but there was no requirement that get waived out of the TIF. That is to say, if the TIF financing did not come through,
right.
Some who may not know it as well could find this misleading to say that the fee waiver is coming from the tax increment financing, which the resolution has no tie
right.
to TIF.
And the resolution did not include that, but that was always a part of the council discussion, was
but
that they would back.
Just want to make sure this is being conveyed
correct.
In a clear manner.
Yes, I agree.
There's no tie in the resolution to the TIF funding.
That is correct.
Okay,
yep, thank you. And then also the TIF district is currently in place. It's TIF District 1-9. It was for the Target project and also the Ryan development that goes along with that. It's financed over 25 years through 2030. TIF financing is in place irregardless of this project. So it doesn't matter if this project moves forward or not. TIF financing exists in that area. The amount of TIF is very dependent on future market values. Preliminary market value estimates, it's about $14,000 a year for tax increment. That number could easily change as everything's based on the projections. So if the economy takes a turn, that might not be the case. As far as the structure of this meeting, residents are able to provide comment at the staff table at the front of the room. So this table where we've got two chairs, what I want to do is have one person start with comments, and we can have another person who wants to provide comments sit in the opposite chair, and we can just go back and forth. All speakers, please sign in. We've got the sign-ins over by Dino. And then all speakers, please give your name and address. So that's what we're requesting tonight. I've got three comment cards. I think we'll start with these three as our first three speakers. Julie Faxfog from 1220 Oakview Road.
Can we move this so we
yes, can let's move that out of the way.
Hi. My name is Julie Faxfog, and I'm a resident of Medina for the last 26 years, and I support this project, and I hope our city council can support it as well. Dominion is a reputable developer. The site is not perfect, but it's a good site. It's close to places where people can work, and we have a transportation issue maybe for some of the people, but there is a, like Plymouth Metrolink, there's a thing like that out in Medina that they could use. This is our chance to support families in our community who need affordable housing. It doesn't cost us anything. It's a small commitment, only 32 units. And I appreciate Mayor Weir's support of this and giving us the chance and a fair-minded opportunity to support families in our community. Thank you.
The next speaker is Laura Good, 2765 Capriol Drive. And then if we could have somebody come up for the second chair, Krista Sullivan.
Hi, my name is Laura Good. I'm a resident with my husband and three children in Tuckboro Farm, 2765 Capriol Drive. I've been a resident here for 10 years, and I'm also on the board of IOCP. I support this deal for a couple of reasons. There's definitely a need for more economically diverse housing in our community and in the western suburbs in general. This particular project is attractive because of Dominium being such a highly reputable developer and highly reputable property manager and property maintainer. And the location is nearly ideal for the tenants. It's not perfect, but it's nearly ideal, with the one exception that it's not embedded in a more prosperous neighborhood. On the other hand, from the residents' perspective, that's one of the advantages of this project. It does not directly, it's not directly adjacent to any particular neighborhood. It's a very small project. It's only 32 units. To say that in another way, that's less than a quarter of a percent of the households in Medina. And if some of these big major developments come through, it'll be such a small percentage of the total Medina households. It is in line with the comprehensive plan, but I think that at 32 units, it's not going to tax Medina's infrastructure outside of the sewer and water like some of these 200-300 unit developments that are in the queue will. And along those lines, having sat through a couple of homeowners association meetings about this, I hear and also agree with the angst around the growth rate that's being forced on Medina. But I think that this is not the battle that we should take as citizens. I think we should take the battle to the ginormous 300-unit developments that we just don't have the infrastructure to sustain, rather than picking on this one socially responsible small development in a plot of land that doesn't really have any other higher use. So,
Chris Sullivan is next. Also, I failed to mention Freya Thaman from the Metropolitan Council is here. Also, Katie Rodriguez, our commissioner for the Met Council, will be here later, so she will also be available for questions.
I'm Krista Sullivan. I live at 1245 Oakview Road. I'm sorry, Julie, I'm going to have to disagree with you on this one. Julie is my neighbor. I'm reading this for Joanne Ferris, who can't be here tonight, and her husband was the ex-mayor of Medina. So she says, I, along with many other residents in Medina, are concerned with what the city is proposing. We moved to Medina 30 years ago because this was an amazing, beautiful, laid-back community in our mind, and there was not another city like it. We fled Plymouth. Our neighboring farmer sold the property, and the city was building 350 tightly homes together. And I would think that some of you, along with most of the residents, moved here for the same feeling. We've already watched in disbelief the Lennar development go in between Hunter and Brockton Roads. We see these homes being constructed only feet from one another, inches feet from the road. In my mind, this impacts all of us, not just the residents who live within earshot of the development. We can't sit back with the attitude, it's not in my backyard. It's being proposed in our city, and that's our backyard. No matter how you look at it, it's high density. It will change the look and the feel of our city forever. Our city is to be cherished, for it is unique, one of a kind, a gem in the crossroads, and in my mind, there is no other place in the Twin Cities that is unique and as special as this. Our council wrote our theme for 2013, Medina Grows While Preserving Its Rural Past. This reflects the recent suburban growth in the city's northeast, the rural districts to the west and the south. Why are we doing this? I capitalize preserving, for I think it's the key word here, preserving our rural past. We must all recognize how important that thinking is and do everything possible to make it happen. Now, in addition, my husband and I live at, Joanne is my neighbor, she lives at 1240, I live at 1245. So my husband and I feel pretty strongly that we moved to Medina because of its rural nature and the proximity to Minneapolis. We are opposed to the city's recent and proposed plans to destroy the very reason people moved to Medina. We're really not interested in any high density, and the city's repeated justifications of expense issues are not rational. High density will create expense for additional infrastructure and personnel. If people want to live in a high-density area, there are plenty of areas in the metro for them to do so, and it's absurd to try and recreate that in Medina. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. We're open for another resident, whoever wants to comment, you can please just come to the microphone and identify yourself and provide your address, please. Thank you.
How much time do I have? My name is Frank Mignone. I've lived in this community for 33 years. It's a great place to live. I'm not against change, but the change has got to be in a point where it's fair for everybody. There's some questions that I'm just going to throw some questions that don't need to be answered right now. But when you develop a property, you've got to pay all these fees. I hope that these folks pay the full park dedication fee. I hope they pay full building permit. You build a house for $500,000, it's a $10,000 building permit. Whatever the value of that property is, I want that same building permit fee to be charged to them. This is a business, a for-profit business. We don't support them. We don't take the risk. Let them take the risk. Okay. And is any variances be given for setbacks, parking, building heights, green space, hard surfaces, any other issues?
Right, and those issues will be addressed on June 3rd by the
council. Oh, okay, because remember, a variance is only given if it's not the fault of the building or what you're trying to do. We don't give you a variance because, you know, hey, I bought too small of a lot. Okay. Okay. And we have no time restriction on this. I don't care about Met Council, what they want to do. We need, as a community, to do the due diligence. If that takes 6 months, a year, we do it. Last month, City Council, there was a guy that was doing a lot split. It took him 2 years to get it done. If that's what it is, let's wait on. Hey, we have no urgency to the landowner, to Dominion, to IOCP. The responsibility is to us, the residents. Okay. Okay. I don't want to get too emotional here, but anyway. Now, the other point, and other people bring it up maybe too, that well house that's on the side of that same property, is that city property?
Yes,
if it is city property, you're not going to give that away? And then remember, if that's a property, the variances have to be the same, that it's so far away from the building and stuff like that. So, hey, don't give away my stuff. I paid for it for 33 years. Okay, one other thing I'll close up here. That's very, very important. I want this on the record right now. There's a thing called segregation. This property totally segregates these people from everybody else. Are we doing the right thing? And in fact, I found the property that's in my backyard we should do. It's 8 acres on Brockton, on Medina Road, 8 acres. It's beautiful. It's in just extend the sewer district. They would be with the other 400 Lennar homes. This is probably a good thing. I live across the street from that. So, hey, you can't segregate these people. I'm not saying these people, but the location, the size of the property is not good. It's totally wrong, and it's segregation.
Hi, I'm sure nobody expected me to be here tonight, and I can't really afford to be here.
Can you identify yourself?
Again, I'm Linda Lake, and I live at a Dominion property, and I just had a meeting with our management at Dominion this morning.
And your address, please?
10820 South Shore Drive, number 11, Plymouth, Minnesota, 55441.
Okay, you're not a Medina resident.
No, I drive through Medina. Well, I did drive through. Until I retired, I drove through here every day. On my way to work, I had a flower shop in Maple Plain, so I drove 24 to and from work every day.
This meeting's for Medina residents to provide input on this project.
I can provide unique insights here because I am a resident of a Dominion property. And I love this community. Like I said, I've been driving back and forth for 9 years down County Road 24. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful community. And all due respect to IOPC, I love LaDonna. I love what they're doing there. But nobody, like this gentleman has said, nobody is doing their due diligence here. If you went and drove by my home tonight, my grass is knee-high. We rarely get snowplow service in the winter. I've read some of the articles coming out in the Laker, and we just all laugh about it because it's such BS. They're going to take such good care of the property, and they're promising to be great management. And if you came where I live right now, one of the reasons there aren't more police calls, because they actually encourage a criminal element, because those people don't report. those people want to stay under the wire, just like illegal aliens. They don't want the police coming there. They don't want to be. So I report crime to management. I'm told, call the police. Okay? They don't want to be involved. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to get rid of the crime. The only thing that gets rid of the crime is eventually if you make enough police calls, the police deal with it. But, like, I reported crime that happened over the weekend. I spoke to the fire chief. I actually called him out to my residence for illegal fire burning next to a wetland within 25 feet of the unit. I explained all of this with drunken high people using flame starting elements, which you're not supposed to do also. These are all against code. I explained this all to management today, and I was given the poo-poo, whereas the fire chief and the fire marshal both encouraged management to hand out a list to the residents banning fire pits. This is just a little example, okay? Mm-hmm. There's much bigger things going on there, but this is just a small example. I asked that she would please make copies of that and distribute it today so that the next time that we had violations that the chief could come out and ticket and write infractions to people. And no, that didn't happen. So this is just a small example, but I've lived there for 15 years, and I've lived at other properties, and I can tell you they're better managed.
Okay.
They're better managed. Like I said, we get snowplow maybe a week after the snow comes, if we're lucky, and until then, we're just left to our own devices.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
And could I just go on record as, since I'm a whistleblower, and if I become homeless after this, there's a reason that that happened.
John Shishilla, I'm a Medina resident now for about 18 years. I live at 4335 Shorewood Trail in Medina, which is part of the Foxbury neighborhood. As you can see, I'm wearing cycling gear, but I typically wear a suit during the day, and I'm just kind of multi-processing here because it's such a busy life. I'd like to just kind of back up to just two fundamental questions that as soon as this sort of hit my radar, I read everything I could find. My wife attended the meeting that the mayor attended that I think you arranged. And I haven't really come across information that answers the question, why must we consider it? Mm-hmm. What happens if we don't do it?
Right.
And it would seem to me that there must be some sort of stick, you know, in terms of financial stick. I've seen some mention of Met Council. I have no idea what influence they have on our city,
right,
really. And so I just don't understand the fundamentals of that. And I feel like we should understand what got us to here. We've been talking about the quality of the project, and, you know, that's all great stuff to cover when you're at a point where you believe that you have to consider a project. Mm-hmm. Speaking for myself, and I think maybe for a number of the people in the room, this was nowhere on my radar 60 days ago. It seems like an awful lot of work has gone into preparing all kinds of plats, lots of investigation. We're going to make a decision on this on June the 3rd. It's the 28th, and this is our public comment period. I just wonder, you know, what has caused us to get to where we are right now, and do we have options? Mm-hmm. I mean, not do we have different developer options.
Right.
Do we have to do this at all?
It's a policy decision for a city council to make, and that policy decision needs to be made by our city council either at the meeting on June 3rd or possibly June 17th. It's just going to depend on how that discussion goes. But this was an application brought forward by Dominium. The city has an obligation to move forward and bring that forward, discuss it, and come up with a policy decision. So staff is bringing this forward. The council is going to have to make a policy decision on whether or not they support this and want this to move forward. As far as the Met Council, Freya, can you talk to that? And also, Kay Rodriguez is here, too.
Sure. My name is Freya Thaman. I am staff at the Metropolitan Council, and I work in local planning assistance. And my role is mainly working with communities and their comprehensive plan. This particular project, this particular project is consistent with the city's comprehensive plan. The Met Council supports mixes of uses, housing choice. This project is consistent with Met Council policies. As far as the Met Council and the requirements of the Met Council, by state law, the Met Council has some responsibilities, and one of those is to determine affordable housing need within the region as a whole, and then allocate that need to communities within the region. So that's one thing that the Met Council does. State law also requires that the comprehensive plan update includes a housing chapter. And within that housing chapter, this community needs to have essentially three required elements. The community needs to identify that allocated affordable housing need for the community, acknowledge that number within the comprehensive plan. Then the community also needs to guide enough land at densities of six or more units an acre to meet that need. So, for example, if the need for a community was 60 units, they would need 10 acres of land within a community guided at six or more units an acre. If it's 600, then it needs 100 units. So we look at that, and then we also look to see that the city has included ways to implement and provide for affordable housing. So those kind of outline what by state law is required of the Met Council and then also of communities as they do their comprehensive plan update. And the Met Council is supportive of projects that provide choices, housing for all different stages of life, and is supportive of this project.
I'm Lori Cousineau, and I live at 4587 Medina Lake Drive. And I've been a resident of Medina for 15 years. And in speaking of the Met Council, my concern is pretty much what John said. What are the ramifications if we fail to meet our comprehensive plan as it's been approved? What are our opportunities to negotiate some of the items in the comprehensive plan, and what is the Met Council's response to some of this growth that's just exploding out here in Medina in regards to transportation infrastructure? As you look at Highway 55, I don't know if you came out that way tonight, it is just, it's burdened. We have no help because it's a state highway, I understand. But your job at Met Council is to respond to transportation, infrastructure, water, sewer, all of that. What is your plan for Medina? If we're growing at this rate, what's your plan for those things that we need to accommodate the growth?
My name is Katie Rodriguez, and I am on the Met Council. I'm representing District 1, which is Dayton, Maple Grove, Plymouth, and west of the Hennepin County border. I wanted to apologize for being late. I was at a Met Council meeting, and I left that early, but there were some important votes on the agenda. Again, I'm Katie Rodriguez. I am on the Met Council. I represent District 1, and District 1 is Dayton, Maple Grove, Plymouth, and then west of the Hennepin County border. And the issue that you brought up about transportation limiting growth, or I guess complicating growth in the suburbs, is one that I have voiced on the council many times. However, it is a function of lack of revenue. We have $50 million, this is according to MnDOT, we have about $50 million each year for expansion projects from now until 2023, and $0 after that. And that is not, I mean, the Met Council is advocating for more transportation funding, but that is not in their control.
But then is the Met Council willing to give us a suspension of, you know, implementing the comprehensive plan until we have some relief? Can we, so that we're not rushing into all of this development, including this Dominion project, until we have some infrastructure to accommodate this true explosion that we have north of 55 and just by virtue of a sewer, we're growing at a rate we can't really sustain. I mean, we're having a hard time getting to work every day, or we're having a hard time getting to the places we need because we have one major thoroughfare. So is the Met Council willing to maybe accommodate the city as we need, as we slow down potentially, and can we work together, or is there some kind of threat that the Met Council may have over the city which makes us feel compelled to provide affordable housing right away, you know, when we would like to pause and find maybe a more suitable location? Is this something the Met Council can work with the city on, or are we rushing to meet the...
Well, we have worked with the city, and okay. We worked with all the cities in the seven-county region, and our first draft of the population forecast came out, and there was a pretty strong reaction, and actually, this council, the first draft, had the growth in the more in the inner core and not in the suburbs, in part because of that's where the infrastructure was. We were trying to be conservative because that's where the infrastructure was, and it cost more to build more infrastructure. However, the Met Council does not control the market, and so in discussions with, there were many of the outer county, or I'm sorry, the outer communities that were very concerned about that. They wanted to see the growth. You know, Medina's a little bit different in that, even among my district, in that they would like to see the growth slowed. Okay. Many of the communities were very upset that they wanted to see more growth out here and less in the inner core. So there was a lot of meetings, meetings with builders associations of the Twin Cities, and the communities gave comments, and then the growth was more evenly balanced. But again, the population forecasts aren't the Met Council saying, this is what we want to see. It's our best guess at what the market's going to do, and also saying these are where this is where the infrastructure is, and this is the most cost-effective plan for this region.
Good.
And I just want to say, on a personal note, this is more Katie Rodriguez than Katie Rodriguez on the Met Council, but I live in Maple Grove, and I live right by two affordable housing developments, and one of them was done by IOCP. We're within walking distance, and my daughter volunteers there once a week with the homework club. And it really has been, it's an asset in our community. It has not been a negative.
Okay. I just wanted the record to show that the Met Council is not forcing this on the city in a time frame that's not conducive to logic, I guess. I mean, I just wanted to have the City Council understand that the Met Council is not going to sue them in the event we don't provide affordable housing in 2014.
The affordable housing... right now it's 506, right?
506 units.
For 2030.
Yes.
And that is a goal.
Is it for 2030 or 2020?
The time period is 2011 to 2020.
2020. We have to have 506 affordable housing units.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. So it's not mandated, is what I'm trying to get some clarification on the Met Council's power on cities. So it's a suggested goal. And it is in our comprehensive plan, which we've approved in Medina. Mm-hmm. But in the event we don't make it, what are the ramifications? I guess that's been sort of the buzzwords around some of the discussions. What happens if we don't achieve that goal?
So
is what I need the City Council to know.
So, yeah, the 506 is a goal and not a mandate.
Okay.
It's something to achieve to. And if that number isn't met, it means that there aren't affordable housing units in the region, that the need is not being met. So
there is a fair market kind of issue here, I mean a free market issue. So if there was a need for 506 affordable housing units in Medina, we would end up having to build them because there was a legitimate need. If we don't make that, it's probably because there wasn't a significant need for people that have no access to transportation or retail or whatever. That it just, this wasn't the best location then. The market wouldn't bear out 506 units.
The need is still there. Mm. How it is divvied up among the different communities is... it's actually being reviewed right now as part of the 2040 plan.
Yeah.
Comprehensive plan,
mm-hmm.
A regional development plan. But the need is still there.
Okay.
If 506 units aren't built here. There's 506 units that are
agreed
of unmet need.
Agreed. I'm just not saying. I'm saying they may just not be here in Medina. I mean, the market might not bear it here in Medina. They might bear it in Plymouth or, you know, maybe Hopkins. I'm just saying it may not be here in Medina. Correct.
The need is still here.
The need is still here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And then back to your concern about transportation issues and
yes,
everything else.
Yes, what will we get?
The city council, mayor, and staff, we've provided a lot of comments on the 2040 preliminary plan, and that's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about, can we really support this many people? And also, we have some major concerns with transportation, and we need to make sure that the Met Council is well aware of that.
Okay. Jamie, could you please speak up, because the people here and the people there, all the people back here, in the hall, no one can hear anything.
Okay. We will speak up. Sorry.
Could more people come into the room? There's a chair here. Somebody can sit here. I can sit on the desk here. Could more people come in? I want a volunteer. Two volunteers.
There's a seat here.
Two volunteers. Come on. Be brave.
We'll be bashful.
There's a chair here. We don't need these things sitting on the chair. We need to get you in the room.
Who's the gentleman in the blue shirt?
Sell it.
Would you come and join us?
Come on.
That's okay.
Okay, sir, I believe you're next.
There are more chairs back here, too.
I think if you could come in, it'd be fairer. There's one here. There's how many here?
Two. And there's all of
them. So could more people come in than people in here?
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, my name is Bill Ciora. I live at 915 Sunset Court in Foxbury Farms. And I also have been a resident here since 1997. What I've been trying to figure out, and since Dominion is here, maybe they could explain it, is the economics of this project. According to Liz, this is a $6 million project, 32 units. It's going to have a clubhouse. It's going to have on-site staff. And you're going to be renting these from $400 plus to up to $1,200 a month, figuring an average of, I don't know, $900, $1,000 a month. I'm not sure. But that comes out to roughly $300,000 a year. And it works out to almost $200,000 per unit for affordable housing. And I can't think of any investor, company, entity that would spend $6 million to generate $300,000 a year in gross income before expenses. It just doesn't make sense. So there's something missing here. I mean, the only entity I can think of that would do something that stupid is the federal government.
Mr. Ciora, well, Jeff, can you come up and...
Sure, you want me to respond?
Yes, if you can come up, you can have a seat right here.
Jeff Huggett, I'm with Dominium, and in response to your question, I think this was part of what Nick had talked about in the presentation. This housing is being built with the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Program, which is actually it's a federal government program, and it was actually passed during the Reagan administration. And the idea behind that program is really pretty simple. We make some promises for 15 years to keep rents affordable and to rent to people at or below 60% of the median income, which is the $49,000 that Nick had put out there. In exchange for that, we receive tax credits.
How much?
In this case, it's probably about, I don't know, $5.5-6 million worth of tax credits or something like that. Those are...
So you're getting it for free?
Those are... Well, I would hardly call it for free. those are then essentially sold for equity, and the so that equity will be invested into this property, and it it keeps it on a solid financial footing. So that's how it works.
Well, if there's no investment, I can see why this young lady isn't getting services.
Exactly. You're paying your taxes so that we can have a fair living environment, and it's going into somebody's pocket and not being used at the development.
These guys are all
I would hardly say that. I mean, it's an expensive proposition to build for.
Will you have somebody address her issues?
I'm sorry?
Will you have somebody tomorrow address her issues at her development?
Yeah.
Find out what's going on?
We've been told for over a year nobody can afford to get a new store.
Mr. Ciora, did you have any further
no,
questions?
No, that's okay. Thank you. You answered my question.
Ann Nelson, I've been a resident here for 14 years. I go by my son's age. And I need more than 2 minutes, so I'm going to take Corey's 2 minutes, if I may. I need 4 minutes. I'm going to a couple fragmented statements. The need is still there. I question that statement. So if we could come back to that, because it's inconsistent with what we just saw, and it said that this housing is being provided for a need for Medina residents. I don't think there's 506 units needed for Medina residents. So I'm curious how you come up with that need, and I just don't want to leave it out there as a blanket fact, because it's not. I am going to take a I'm a big picture person. I'm going to take a step back. One other fragmented statement I'm going to make is it's going to sound like I'm not compassionate and I don't support low-income housing. That's not true. We give lots of money. This room gives lots of money to various organizations. We give our time to IOCP. We give money. So this isn't about being a lack of compassion. It's about effectiveness. So that's where my head is. A statement was made earlier about helping homeless families to move from survive to thrive. Everyone can support that statement, but if we move from 10,000 feet to 3,000 feet, let's see how successful these projects have been in helping people move from those positions. There's really three things that can happen in this effort to move from survive to thrive. They can receive support and spiral up. They can receive support and spiral down. They can receive support and stay the same and remain dependent. There's only one outcome we are trying to achieve. If people stay the same, it isn't worth all the resources that are being poured into this. Some brief historical context. In 1965, a War on Poverty campaign was put into place. At the time, the U.S. had 17.3% poverty. Roughly $799 billion was spent in 2012 on this campaign. The U.S. poverty rate last year was 2012, and in 2012 was 15%. The point I'm making is we have had almost 50 years of effort on helping people in this type of situation. A fair question is what works and what doesn't work to lift people out of poverty or low income, and how do we learn from this? There was a really big campaign effort done in the 1990s by redistributing poverty from bigger cities to suburbs or more rural areas. Large cities like New York, Chicago, LA had massive programs to move people and redesign poverty. Some results were good. Some results proved that crime followed relocation, meaning that changing addresses doesn't always improve families with low-income needs. And sometimes this movement has a negative impact on the communities where the relocation occurs. A tipping point has been referred to in many articles or research that you may have looked at. We want to move people from survive to thrive. So let's see what results have been taking place with various low-income or Section 8 housing projects locally. And this is going to add to some of the numbers you've had. Some of this is fact and some of it's anecdotal. Dominion Project in Albertville, you mentioned that there have been 19 police incidents reports filed for the property in the last 2 years. The Plymouth property near Vicksburg and County Road 47, it's an IOCP project, as mentioned, with Common Bond. Plymouth police have stated that roughly 30% of calls have been from that area, including domestics. The gas station across from this property has reported more thefts. The Boulevard apartment, in Wayzata is an IOCP project with 6 units. There were numerous police calls to that complex early on with one tenant who was out of control. IOCP stated at the time they had no policies in place to remove tenants who had issues. That this may have been resolved, but at the time, there were many concerns. Habitat for Humanity humanity projects in Wayzata, two twin home structures. It was an IOCP project. Families from Somalia were placed in the homes. Problems started soon after. Apparently different sects of S-E-C-T-S of Somalians were put together, which caused strife. A mediator had to be hired to come in and deal with the situation. One Somali father was reported for beating his wife. He also beat his daughter for going to the gas station across the street without an escort. Eden Prairie, if you Google Eden Prairie, there's lots of articles that have been written recently about low-income housing projects there. One was about school issues. There was a kind of maxing out of the free lunch program and issues with integrating kids. So school boundary lines were redrawn to redistribute low-income housing children and impacted resident children as well. Kids close to some schools were getting bused 20 minutes to schools farther away. And this comes right from an article. In some apartments, the lease lists five people, but there were 10 people living there. Kids didn't have a place to play, so they were getting into people's cars and garages in the neighborhoods. In another case, kids were dodging cars at one of the complexes. They were playing chicken with cars. One townhome was housing seven Somali children. The city hired a Somali liaison to their staff to help with low-income housing. Why I bring this up, it hasn't been noted tonight, but in some of the other meetings, one of the questions about this project are, where are kids going to play? If they go in their backyard, they go into the Medina Country Club, they're going to get in trouble for wanting to throw a football or play soccer. That's not a good situation. They have a tot lot, which is great, but if you have 70 to 80 kids in that location, it's not going to be conducive. So they're going to go in the parking lot, they're going to find things, where are they going to find things to do? So what's the point of reading this list? One is I wanted to provide some of the facts we're hearing that are inconsistent with everything works out, everything's fine. It can spiral up, it can spiral down, or it can stay the same. To the Met Council representatives, to me, in my humble opinion, it appears the strategy that's being followed by the Met Council is decades old, and it has proven not to be the most effective strategy. That is the strategy of changing addresses. We have a nationally recognized anti-poverty program in Minneapolis called the Jeremiah Program. It is being copied in other states. It would never relocate people to a rural town with no bus service, no grocery stores. It's far away from an opportunity to retool themselves at a community or vocational school, and the list goes on. So please research this program or really ask yourself if that strategy is the right one you're imposing on lots of people. To the Medina Council, is the parcel of land behind Medina Ballroom going to spiral people up, or is it going to help spiral these folks down?
Representative Hurtas.
Good evening. I'm Representative Jerry Hurtas. I represent you folks here in Medina. And, you know, I've listened to the presentation, and I made a few notes, just had some questions that I think are germane that the council will want to be thinking about and that all of you as residents will want to be thinking about. Number one, I guess, is this site conforming to the generally guided principles of highest and best use? Is this the highest and best use for that property? Dominion gave a presentation about what they do and that it's that they're going to operate the property for 15 years. I guess my question would be, what will happen after 15 years? Will this still be affordable housing? Will it still be operated by Dominion? There was mention of lots of fees being waived as necessary to build a project like this. My question would be, if it's sold after 15 years, will the fees that were waived by the city be recaptured upon sale? Of the fees being waived, I guess you'd probably want to find out what fees are being waived. Now, some of the folks, I'm trailering on some of the previous comments, but I've spent the last 30 years building homes in the private for-profit industry. I've yet to see any of my building permits be waived. I've not yet seen any of the whack and sack charges imposed by Metropolitan Council waived. Will refuse fees be waived? or stormwater fees if Medina has them? Will street lighting fees be waived? Will the developer certainties be waived, performance bonds and cash escrows?
As to that that line of questioning is the $300,000 is the sack and whack. That's all the council has discussed.
And I, too, looked at the project and just counted the units and figured in my head without going to my computer and figuring out that it was probably a $5 million, $5 or $6 million project. Will that, continue to be contributing to the city as in terms of its tax capacity? Make no mistake that affordable housing is an issue, not just here, but all around. The previous speaker just addressed that issue. We have been having a war on poverty for 50 years. Today you're hearing a lot of discussion about the achievement gap, the income gap, the housing gap. Everything is a gap. And what is really going on is a pursuit to create uniformity in everyone's lifestyle. So I sit on the housing committee down in St. Paul. There's an endless line of people lining up for distributions from state government to carry out this mission. Many of them are worthy, maybe not so much. As a business model, as I listened in committee, listening to all these different entities ask for money to carry out these things, it's an interesting proposition. I mean, you amortize or subsidize to build a project, you get quite a bit of payments to make it work, you amortize it over 15 years, take the depreciation schedules that are set by law, and then recapture that in terms of long-term capital gain at a deferred or preferable taxable rate. And it just really begs the question if all of this redistribution is really serving its end need, because when fees are waived and subsidies are being put out there, you're paying for it, and it's diminishing each of your respective lifestyles. So there's no simple answers. We've had this debate before with the Met Council and members of staff. As past mayor of Greenfield, this is an expensive area to be building affordable housing. So those are questions that need to be revisited on June 3rd. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is John Anderson, and together with my wife, Trish, I live at 2785 County Road 24. I'm also a member of the Medina City Council. I wanted to speak tonight very, very quickly to clear up what I think are still some misconceptions with respect to sanctions that the Met Council may or may not impose upon the city if we choose or choose not to go forward with the Dominion project. And I'm going to read from an email that Freya authored on May 8th, and it was addressed to our Mayor Elizabeth Weir. Katie, you and Scott were both copied in on this email, and this will be entered into the record. Hello. C.M. Rodriguez, Councilman Rodriguez, shared your email below, which indicates that a resident asked about the sanctions that the Metropolitan Council can bring to bear if cities fail to meet the requirements of the Metropolitan Council. I was that resident who asked that question. I wanted to follow up and assume that the question relates to affordable housing. Below is some background information that discusses housing requirements from the comp plan and the city's affordable housing need number. The affordable housing need number is a useful reminder that communities need to continue to the extent possible facilitate efforts to develop medium and high density multifamily homes that offer the greatest opportunity for affordability, rental housing options, and the provision of life cycle housing choices for their residents. The affordable housing need number is a goal and not mandatory requirement with penalties for not meeting that goal. I'm going to take the liberty to repeat that sentence because I think it's an important sentence for all here. The affordable housing need number is a goal and not mandatory requirement with penalties for not meeting that goal. The primary impact of not meeting the goal is the community and the region continue to have unmet affordable and life cycle housing needs, limiting housing choice. Other impacts could be a lower score on Livable Communities Act grant applications and possibly could be a point of discussion on future comprehensive plan amendments. Thank you.
Please go ahead.
I'm Chris Silberg from still 4559 Trillium Drive. I'm going to stand because I've kind of been sitting for a while. Madam Mayor, council members who are here, I know I've seen a few, and staff, thank you for your time tonight. Thanks for having all of us and hearing the comments from the community on the proposed Dominion project. One of the things that I've noticed, and I've talked to a lot of people about this project over the past few weeks, one of the things that really struck me was this talk about those professionals who live in subdivisions and their lack of contributions to the community. They're not the kind of people who are going to contribute. They're not the compassionate ones. You know, this is the kind of housing project that really demonstrates that. And I found that very jarring. To hear someone say that out loud, to hear that's what people might think of me. And, in my personal life, I do donate time. I was involved with an organization, the Children's Law Center, based out of St. Paul, where their primary mission is to take children who are in the program, the system, the foster system, and give those children personal legal representation. And a lot of those kids are from broken homes, families where physical abuse, substance abuse, and worse, are part of their lives. And children who maybe are not so different than some of the people that the IOCP is helping through their mission. So why am I mentioning that? It might seem irrelevant, and frankly, I think it's kind of tacky to talk about one's charitable work gratuitously. So I mention this because the people I know in Medina, in my neighborhood and the others, are an incredibly compassionate, talented, and generous group that give with their time, they give with their money, and they give with the resources they have, and I am sure that I'm among the least of them in that regard. And so I am humbled by the people around me and the contributions that they make to their community and the compassion that they have for others around them. So it comes from that vantage point when I say that when we all look at this this proposed project and we look at essentially a commercial district and say, is this the best place to put a residential community? I don't think anyone in their heart of hearts can say, yes, it is. I don't even know if the council or the applicant would say it is. What I would speculate is the council would say, we need to take an application for the land. If it complies with the comp plan, if it complies with the zoning, then we have to approve it. But let me propose some challenges to that line of thinking. And I apologize, I'll try to be quick, but I'm a lawyer, so I'm not good at that. But I really, really will. In addition to not being a good place to install a residential neighborhood, I would question whether this is a financially responsible plan to approve for the city in the manner that it has been proposed. And let me emphasize that. I'm not asking if the plan is financially responsible. Is the plan in the manner it has come before the council next month financially responsible? Let me break that out a little bit. The first, the waiver of the fees from the TIF, the tax increment finance. When TIF works, it works great. You can get more tax revenue, you get more money, it all works. But what if it doesn't? Why was this plan, why was this program not structured as a pay-as-you-go? Zero risk to the city. Right now, the city is at risk. If they don't collect the revenue, the tax revenue, the increased amount that has been projected, we, the taxpayers, are paying that difference. So there's been a forecast, and the city finance director put together a plan and said, here's the expected increase that we are anticipating in the tax increment. My question on that front is, not only is it not pay-as-you-go, where the developer bears the risk rather than the city, meaning us, the taxpayers, did the city perform a study to assess what is the forecast for future increment tax? Do we know that, or was it someone just making an educated guess? And I have no doubt that his guess is much better than mine, but that's not the same as a study. That's not the same as saying, what do we reasonably expect, and can I point to something? So that if in years down the road that tax increment is not realized, we can say, look, we performed a study, we did our best at the time. Can we genuinely say that today? And I submit the answer is no, we can't.
Well, we, like I explained at the beginning, we still need to go through whether or not this project meets the BUD4 test for this.
But it's not pay-as-you-go.
That's correct. It is not a pay-as-you-go TIF. But we still need to figure out if this even gets to that point. We haven't even done the analysis on that. That's why we have Ehlers. They're going to do the analysis on this to even determine if this
is good to know that study is happening. I appreciate that, because to date it hasn't, and the council agreed to waive fees before that was performed. And as now, as you explained earlier, that it'd be done through TIF.
To anything yet. We need to go through the analysis first. We'll go through the analysis, and then we'll make our determination if we are moving forward with
it. If one reads the resolution, what are the contingencies upon which the fees would not be waived?
We need to see if it meets the BUD4. I mean, you're exactly right.
There's very little in there.
We're missing the other side of the discussion, which was the city council said, we're willing to move forward with this, but we need to have the TIF portion of it.
But that's not in the resolution.
That is correct.
Also, on a financial responsibility front, the council has said, I won't apply it to all of them, but members have said that they don't like the development in Medina either, but it has to be in compliance with the comp plan, which is required by the Met Council. If the Met Council is the entity that is forcing these comp plans, which it is, why did the city not take the other side of that coin and apply for the livable communities demonstration account funds? Along with the obligations that come from the Met Council are also the opportunity to apply for funds. That was not done here. And I haven't heard a good reason why we haven't, other than perhaps maybe we did it once. But another case is the project as proposed the most financially responsible way to achieve it. And finally, I have heard months ago the city was considering and okay with conveying the portion of this land that is city-owned property. But what I haven't, and I've heard more recently, that will happen because the application as a plat combines the subject property that's being purchased by Dominion along with the city property. However, what I haven't heard is there a purchase agreement? What is the price? Not only what is the price, what is the fair market value of that land based on the land that Dominion is acquiring from
right.
Medina
and
Entertainment?
That's one of the decisions the city council also has to make at the June 3rd meeting, is whether or not they're willing to convey the property. That hasn't even been decided yet.
But the plan was considered, assuming that would be part of it.
That's
setbacks,
correct. Dominion,
buffers, perimeters were calculated,
Dominion did include that
city land
portion. That's correct.
So what I want to know is, what is the fair market value of a piece of land with a well on it that the developer is going to use? Because now the developer does not need to invest in their own well. They can meet some setbacks and perimeter challenges and impervious surfaces they could not have met without that property. That property has value, and we as taxpayers should expect that a fair market value is being paid for it.
That's correct. You're putting the cart before the horse, though, because council still needs to have these discussions.
Okay. But that wasn't one of the conditions coming out of the Planning Commission that this plat get approved. The conveyance of that land was proposed as part of it, but it was not a condition.
That's correct, because they only deal with the planning side of it. They do not deal with the land.
Right, portion. But the perimeters and impervious surface requirements that the Planning Commission does work with would not be satisfied without that land.
That's correct, but the City Council still needs to make the ultimate approval on whether or not the property is conveyed.
Understood. Understood.
Okay,
so I'll wrap up the financial responsibility aspect of this, and I'll just comment, Madam Mayor, I know you've said before that you would need to vote against this. You did not see reasons to date, and that was a week ago, but that for a council member to vote against this, he or she could not just do this, couldn't just vote against it. He or she would have to make a findings of fact to support a denial of this particular application. And it sounded like a pretty insurmountable challenge. Cities do it from time to time, but that it would be a requirement to make a findings of fact to deny it. So having a little extra time, I'm a busy dad, busy professional in my subdivision, I thought I would do you a favor, and I drafted one for you. And I'm gonna.
This is at the Bridgewater about 3 weeks.
I'm gonna submit that. Can I give you a copy of this for your consideration? And I certainly won't read it to everyone, but I will tell you what it says. Are any of the council members like a copy? Dusty, would you like a copy of this?
I can hand those out.
I'll just run down the highlights here because I think they're relevant, and they're not about affordable housing. They're about, is this the proper use for the land? This is just a draft, me just kind of thinking thoughts. First off, the comprehensive plan guides this parcel of land as mixed-use business. The comprehensive plan also defines mixed-use business, and I'll read you the definition. Mixed-use business provides opportunities for multiple compatible uses on one site, including two or more of the following: residential, general business, commercial, or office. I'm going to say it again. Two or more of the following: residential, general business, commercial, or office. And the representative for Dominion, I apologize, I'm going to borrow your chart here. If you look at this, this is residential. It is one use. One use. In this single-story building, there's a rental office, and there's an IOCP office, and a common room. Those are accessory uses. Those do not count as separate uses. This proposal is a single use. The proposal doesn't comply with the comp plan. How do I know? Because common sense says it's residential, but that's not the only reason. The applicant, Dominion's architect, in a letter they dated in December that went to the Planning Commission for their meeting that the Planning Commission relied upon, said, and I'm quoting here, "This project will be entirely residential in nature and does not qualify as a mixed-use development." Let me say it again. Does not qualify as a mixed-use development. And I don't think anyone on the council would disagree that this is guided mixed-use business. When the Planning Commission met again, they had another document in front of them. It was a memo from Dominion, the actual applicant. Medina received this on March 5th. In that, it had the exact same quote from Dominion. "This project will be entirely residential in nature and does not qualify as a mixed-use development." Everyone remember the definition of mixed-use business? Two or more of the following. It's not a suggestion. It's not, hey, you could mix uses, because some of the packets that went to the Planning Commission said mixed use means you can mix uses, you could have more than one. But that's not what the comp plan says. The comp plan says two or more. If it was just possible to mix more than one, you would say I'd mix one or more of the following. But two or more. Sorry, I'm getting all excited. Two. I'm also going to point out the actual zoning density. This land is zoned, and that's a different thing guided. It is zoned as mixed use. And if you read the city code for mixed use, what it says is the residential density shall average between 3.5 units per acre and 6.99 units per acre. This is 8.6 something. This exceeds what it is zoned for. Now, what they have said is, well, you can take that density, and there's some other mixed-use areas, and if you get a little more density there, then, you know, lower density, it'll all even out. Here's the problem with that. There are only four parcels in Medina outside of Uptown Hamel that are guided mixed-use business. There's the property we're talking about now, and then there are a few others just south of Foxbury Farms. Here's the problem. If you allow this unit to have more density and say it's okay because we'll mix it across the other, you are now binding these other lands and forcing them to have lower density than they would otherwise be obligated to have. I can tell you, I looked up the ownership of those three other parcels that are mixed-use business. They're not a party to this. They have not given a transfer of development rights. They have not given up that density. So by saying we will allow more density on this property, you're taking it away from other landowners who are not part of this. They're not being brought to this discussion and not giving up that right. So it's not proper to spread density across. This development needs to be able to stand and fall on its own and comply with the comp plan, and its zoning. It does not. And you'll see that in there. Another item, the parcel Chris, immediately... this is important stuff. Should I stop?
No.
Chris,
no.
This is important. No. Chris, but we're trying to limit our comments so other people can get in.
I feel this is too important for the council to hear.
We have asked for a short time. This is a planned unit development, and I don't know if we should have our planner come up and speak to this, because it sort of overrides some of what Chris has told
me. But you have looked for findings of fact. I'm giving them to you. And this is a PUD, and Dusty, we've talked. The reason that you have filed it as a PUD, or the applicant has to do with the space between the buildings. You can't PUD a change of use. PUD is not there to change the use.
Plan unit development
where you are varying from the otherwise zoning requirements. So you need a little shorter driveway. You need to put more buildings together to fit the units in. That's the only reason given to the Planning Council. If this is being used as a PUD for some other reasons, they were not proposed to the Planning Commission, and that's not why they approved it. So if there are other reasons, the Planning Commission should be given first crack at understanding them and deciding whether it's appropriate. That's not what happened. The land immediately north of this parcel is zoned multiple family residential. If you notice here, this goes right up to the edge. Perimeters are getting really tight there. You have Cherry Hill, you have Wild Meadow South, and if the land north gets developed, you're going to have a third neighborhood on top of this. It is appropriate to reserve a right-of-way for emergency vehicles to be able to get along there so that there is more than a single road serving all four of those communities. There was also a piece of the Planning Commission that was not technically done properly. The city has an obligation to provide notice to the paper when there is going to be one of these items coming before the Planning Commission. The parcel that is owned by the city was never noticed. That was never included in a notice to the newspaper or to the public. And yet, there was a consideration whether the city should be disposing and conveying that land at the Planning Commission. There was no reason anyone reading the newspaper would know that anything was being considered other than the one piece of property. There was no reason anyone would have known the city property was also being considered. Moreover, state law says, Section 462.356, and everyone's going to go home and remember that and say it tonight, that, and I'm going to paraphrase here, after cities passed a comp plan, check, if the city intends to dispose of a piece of city land, it must first notice and have it heard at the Planning Commission before it's disposed of to ensure that such disposal of that land as being proposed here complies with the comp plan. Well, let's look at this. That piece of city land, is it residential? No. Is it mixed use? No. It's public, semi-public. It would have to be rezoned to be part of this. That was never noticed. That to rezone it right now would not be in compliance with our comp plan. The comp plan specifically says it is public, semi-public. To include that piece of land would require a comp plan amendment that has not been proposed or discussed. And, I'm going to stop there because I get there's a sense that people understand. But the gist of it is there are a lot of technical issues here that have not been thoroughly vetted. I understand there's some challenging timelines, and I don't fault the city or the Planning Commission for putting together response times on this. They have an obligation to do so. If they don't act on these, plans are automatically approved. So the Planning Commission is doing their best to take the information they have to look at this plan, and the council is going to do the same. But I spent a little extra time, and what I think I found at least one and maybe more issues that are very serious challenges to this project if the city takes its obligation and state ordinance, the city ordinance, to comply with its own comp plan and its own zoning. So I implore that the council, staff, look at some of these issues to see are we truly in compliance with our own zoning, own PUD ordinances, and our own comp plan on this.
And would you concur that the council has not done their due diligence in researching this?
I know nothing about what the council's put into this, so I really couldn't comment. And from what I know of the council, they are extremely dedicated members of the community that want to do what's best. But I think these are maybe some new issues that haven't been presented to them in the same way.
That's correct. Chris, thank you for the information. Peg, please.
Hi there, my name is Peg Rasmussen.
Peg, can we have you go to one of the mics?
My voice usually carries. My name is Peg Rasmussen, and I own the Countryside Cafe in Medina, and I'm working on my 40th year there, so I'm very proud of that. And one of the things that I've always loved about Medina is that it's a huge community that all gets along. And if you've been in the cafe, and lots of you have, we've got millionaires like Frank sitting right next to other people who don't have so much. And, you know, I always make the assumption that everybody wants the same thing for their family. They want a great school system, and we have it to offer. We talk a lot about early child care and how that's going to save the community money by getting folks into good schools, and I believe it's true. We talk about a nice community and a crime-free community, and I think that's Medina. I think we're very accepting. And I do think, to your point, that people do a lot of good in Medina and that we work a lot. One of the things I'm proudest about at IOCP is that the people who are giving the money are also sweeping up the floor afterwards, and they're putting away the chairs. And that's why I like this community. And it's evident that there are a lot of things going on in this project, and there are a lot of bright minds like yourself. And I'm no attorney, but I'll bet we could do this better here than any other community. I think we could have affordable housing. I think we want to. I think we should. We don't want to have a community where it's the other. To say that there aren't these people in our community is folly. These are people that work for me, that come in every day. I have a young woman who's working for me now who has to pretend that she's living at her mother's so that her child can get good care because he has an autism problem. And so there are lots of the people who would be using this do not have to be the other. I think we can do it better. I would challenge us that if this isn't the project, if this isn't the developer, take these great minds in this room and let's do it right.
Yes.
You know, let's figure it out. And can this be fixed? And Frank, do you want, is that your property across the street you want to sell?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know,
we're questioning this development on this property.
Not, I get that. I get that totally. But I still love Medina, and I welcome everybody to come in, and I would be proud to be part of an effort that would really work on making some meaningful affordable housing in our community so that my employees, the employees of the Medina Ballroom, the employees of many of the other companies could live in our community, because we really don't have that. And a little bit later in the year, I'm going out to visit my wealthy relatives in the Hamptons, and they joke about the trade parade coming into town every morning. Those are the people that work for them but can't afford to live in the community. Is that a community we want to live in? I don't think so. I think that we all have things to offer. So I'm sorry if I got off the specific topics, but anyway, come on in, have a cup of coffee, and maybe we can have a rump caucus and figure out how to do it right.
Thanks, Peg. Philip Milne. I'm a Medina resident for almost 9 years, 1880 Buckskin Drive. Served on the board of IOCP with Peg, and am currently chair of Outreach Development, which is a spin-off of IOCP responsible for affordable housing development in the service area. I'd like to begin by saying I have my own set of issues with the Met Council and some of the development that's going on in Medina, including the density of some of the home projects that were talked about. What I do support is affordable housing, and it seems to me that 32 units, so that we can provide safe, nice housing for working class families, is a drop in the bucket in the density issue here in Medina. And we need to support the people that work in Peg's Cafe and in the other businesses out here in Medina, and we do need affordable housing. There is a need, And I can also tell you the positive impact it has on lives when IOCP works with residents and they do spiral up. I've seen it, I've witnessed it, and I've been a part of it. Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. I'm Seth Hoyt. I live at 1382 Tamarack. Nancy, my wife, and I have been here for about 18 years. And we've come to a lot of council meetings, planning commission meetings over the time that we've been here. We've talked about road lengthening. We've talked about giving up rights to road lengthening. We've heard arguments on development and trees and setbacks, buying buildings, this, that, and the other. And what I want to say, because I can't comment, I'm not qualified, Chris, terrific presentation, thank you, but I'm not qualified to talk about that. But what I've observed, what my wife and I have observed over a period of time through different administrations, through different mayors, through different council members, is, in our view, an absolute commitment to doing what they think is best for the city, taking comments that we make into consideration, sometimes getting it and sometimes not getting it. But I've never seen a time where I felt I've been ripped off in this whole process in this period of time. Taxes are high here, as we've all seen, and they're going up, and that ain't going to change. But as some of you have said, this is really quite a remarkable place to live in. There's been a lot of talk tonight about compassion and how busy everybody is, how hard everybody works. I'm privileged to be a close friend of our mayor, as my wife is as well. I don't know anybody that I've seen that cares more about this city, her adopted city, anybody that works as hard, cares as much, worries this thing like Liz Weir does. And I'm confident, as Peg was saying, there are a lot of good minds in this room, but I want to make sure that Liz is kind of gets the attagirl and high fives that I think she deserves for what she's put into this thing. This ain't easy. This is the most contentious stuff we've seen discussed in 18 years here. Important, but contentious nonetheless. The city has changed. Country has changed. Politics are not homogeneous anymore. And I think you handle that with aplomb and dignity and grace, and most of all with caring. So I want the record, Scott, to show that, please.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Kim. I live in the Cherry Hill neighborhood. And I basically just had some questions.
Kim, can we get your last name for the record?
Murrin.
Okay.
And I basically had some questions about the project. I understand that there were some issues with police reports up at the Rogers Dominium property. And I'm just wondering, has anyone looked into that to have any reports on if there's any merit to that, if that was actually the case?
I got all the police calls I've had for the last 5 years. And that statistic, I don't know if you saw it up there, the total number of calls were 471 calls over a five-year period. And that includes everything from crime to alarms, animal assaults, citizen aid, disturbing the peace, everything from top to bottom.
And is that more calls than, say, in the other part of the city that's not in one of the Dominium properties?
I didn't compare them to the other parts. And I looked at Medina's calls. We have that accessible, so I looked at, I don't know if they like neighborhood, but number of units. And they were comparable. Different types of calls, because it depends on the type
of calls. So it's your opinion that the Dominium project would not increase, disproportionately the number of police calls for that particular area versus the rest of Medina as a whole?
Looking at the data that I have, I believe that we can expect between 30 and 50 calls there on an annual basis, based on the data that I got from...
And that's consistent with the rest of Medina, the averages?
Medina's somewhat lower, but again, it depends on the neighborhood. If it's like Wild Meadows, they have 206 alarms. There's parts of Medina that don't have alarms in their developments, and we don't respond to alarms. So it depends on the development and and the type of development that they're proposing.
Thank you. So my other question is relating to the TIF district property. It's my understanding that basically the purpose of a TIF district area is basically to enhance future growth in the area. So I'm just wondering if someone could provide some information on how the affordable housing rental property would enhance future growth for our community.
The proposed project, Nick, what is the total for the project, proposed project?
Total what?
Total amount for your project.
Of the fee waiver or what?
No, of the total project cost.
The total project cost is
yes.
Roughly $7 million.
Okay, $7 million, that's what they're proposing, a $7 million project. And then what we're talking about is a SAC and WAC fee waiver of $300,000 for the project. Council still needs to look into this. We still need to look into the but-for and whether or not this meets the but-for test. And council still needs to make a policy decision on whether or not they support that. But with this project, what we're saying is that this property would go from a bare piece of property to a $7 million project.
Okay, and so based on that, I mean, I understand how Target that's in the TIF district has enhanced Medina in the area. How will it be that the rental property will enhance the area, being that it's not a business, it's just providing a place for people to live.
Correct.
And providing services to them? How could you explain a little bit about how that would enhance the growth?
Well, it would enhance by providing more property tax value for the city. You go from bare property to a $7 million project.
Okay.
And it's they still pay their property taxes, just like any other project.
So Medina will still collect the $7 million value of property tax, but not until the year 2030, when
once
the
TIF district expires. That's correct.
And then will the residents or the building pay school tax, county tax, et cetera, or is that also waived?
As a part of a TIF district, they would not, as long as they're in that TIF district, they would not pay for the county and also the school district.
The school. Okay, so that would be spread out among the rest of the residents.
That's correct.
To cover the cost for that. Okay. So then my other question would be do we have a representative here from the Dominion?
Yes.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Okay. So my question is,
can we have you come to a microphone?
If you were not offered the opportunity to build at the current site in the TIF district, would you be willing and able to build somewhere else in Medina, or is the fact that you're having the lower tax incentive until the year 2030 basically making that the most desirable and kind of the make or break piece of the deal for you?
I want to first of all make sure I understand the question that you're asking. I think you're asking, why don't you say your question?
Okay, I'll say it again.
Yeah, thanks.
So if the area that we're currently talking about, behind the Medina Ballroom,
sure.
If that area were not available to build, or if it weren't available in the TIF district, because it's my understanding, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, that the TIF is expiring, say, in July, so if we don't have this deal done by July, then it can't happen, and the TIF financing would not be available. Would you still want to build the property somewhere that's not a TIF district within Medina?
Yeah, I mean, I can't answer that because that's really it's kind of a what-if that's really not in front of us.
Okay, so let me rephrase. If July comes and goes and you are not allowed the grant of approval to build that, what is your intention? Do you plan to pursue building it there anyways, even without the TIF? Or have you guys not thought that far ahead into July?
No, we have. We won't proceed with this one if the SAC and WAC waivers are not available.
Okay, so if it expires in July, then you guys are going to move on to another location.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So the question was, would we proceed with this project without the SAC and WAC waivers? And the answer is no, we won't.
So, and that being the TIF district area, when that expires, if it's not done by July, then our representative from Dominion is saying that he does not want to proceed with building the property.
Yeah.
Right, but then that would be another consideration is the
sorry,
time.
You can apply for an extension on the TIF money.
I don't know.
If you have a question, could you come up and ask your chair, Cheryl, or whoever else?
So I just have a remaining two questions. So this is also for you as part of the Dominion. So knowing that there's obviously a lot of opposition and differences regarding this project, do you encounter this with the other places that you've built, and does this make you at all hesitant to come in and put a property in an area where there is a lot of opposition to what you're trying to do?
I think what I've heard is I've heard some opposition and I've also heard some support, and that's pretty typical for most communities that we're in.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, so my last question is for the council members, and I'm not sure where everyone is. But basically, there's a lot going on here from both sides, people who are for the project and those that are against the project. And my question for the council members is, given that, are you wanting to vote to represent the people, and what do you think the residents of Medina want, or kind of what's your basis for voting? Because it seems almost like for putting something in that's causing this much opposition, it would make sense to have a vote in the city to see if it makes sense. But, you know, basically everyone here has elected the five of you to represent us. And so my question is, are you, basically listening to what everyone is saying and trying to do what the majority wants as far as, this question goes, as far as whether or not we put the affordable housing in Medina or not?
And the point of this meeting is for the city council to listen and get input. And thank you for everybody for coming tonight and providing this input. This is very valuable for them. June 3rd is when they're going to be making a formal vote on that. And that's where they speak their minds and bring up their concerns and issues and finally come to a conclusion on what they see as the public policy decision on this.
Yeah, and so my question basically is whether or not what everyone is saying here is if it matters or not. Because,
it does matter.
Very strongly about
yes.
it. And basically the fate
right.
of this, affordable housing is in the hands of five people to
right.
decide. And I'm just wondering if those five people are listening to what everyone's saying and wanting to represent the five people, or are they doing what they think is the right thing for them? Or are they listening to what the population is saying?
I'm a member of the city council, and I very much appreciated all the commentary we received. I've spoken to some of the folks that have spoken tonight and to others, and I'm here to say we wouldn't have encouraged having this discussion if it wasn't here. I do have to tell you, I have loyalties to the city as a whole. Didn't hold the population. I don't know what the majority will is, so I have to exercise some judgment, but that's what I'm doing, to listen to what everyone has to say. And I really do appreciate the comments that someone made, and you really do work quite hard. You spend a lot of time absolutely listening to projects like this. Have people suggest that we're not caring, we're not listening, we're giving away resources on the city. Is not helpful to the discussion.
This gentleman complaining he can't hear you, I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter if he hears
it's not important.
So,
is there
something?
I'm sitting here with all the negative commentary, and we're really trying to do our very best. That's why we're listening. And to some of the email discussions, some of the comments here suggest that we haven't studied the consequences of this project, that we don't understand our own comprehensive plan, that we don't understand the nuances of how the Metropolitan Council works. I, too, have my issues with the disconnect that occurs at the regional government level between the requirement that we consume density without support for the infrastructure. It's absolutely nonsensical, and I will say that every day of the week. But that doesn't mean that this project, the 32 units, is one that necessarily calls that question. I think the next project that had a major impact on the traffic along 55 does do that. But I didn't mean to suggest that it doesn't matter. I'm just thinking that I'm falling on deaf ears here, but it is somewhat hurtful to work as hard as we do for no money, for no glory, for no power. And it suggests we need to hear some of the personal insults that have been cast.
Mm-hmm. And I can't speak to that because I just haven't been involved in that. I just know, you know, just being a resident of Medina and having people that are basically the people who can make decisions for us, I think it's really important that, you know, everyone knows what the Medina residents want and that everyone is actually, you know, representing what Medina wants. And I know that there are some supporters, but I think there's a lot of people who are opposing it, and especially hearing tonight, one of the gentlemen earlier mentioned that the Met Council does not enforce any sort of fine or penalty for not, you know, following the affordable housing guidelines. So it just seems to me, with so much opposition against it and so many things, as this gentleman recommended before, about to look into, instead of trying to push it through, especially if, as the lady in the back mentioned, it would be possible to look into a TIF extension, rather than try to make a quick decision and upset a lot of people on either side of the argument, it may be best to just everyone take a step back and evaluate it and make sure that, you know, the city as a whole is being represented and their viewpoints, and that would also allow the council members time to hear what everyone wants and to best represent them, if that's truly, you know, what matters for you guys, as it sounds like it is, to represent the people who live here and to make informed decisions. So, thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for providing the opportunity, City Council. My name is Carl Hansen, 2000 Lost Horse Road, Medina. I'll be brief. Just four comments on why I think you should reject, delay, or alter this plan. First of all, the Met Council's charter, that's not set in stone, and that can change in the future. In fact, we have candidates who are running for governor now who want to do that, want to change it quite dramatically, if not disband it. So whatever force we are getting from the Met Council, that force may not be here in the near future. So direction can change. Secondly, I'm going to get a little philosophical here. Is that taxpayer money, it should not be used to... No, I'm in favor of affordable housing, and I think everyone in this room is in favor of affordable housing. But we're not in favor, a lot of people are not in favor of, is subsidized housing, okay? And there's a big difference. Now, taxpayer money should not be used to subsidize housing projects. It's an immoral act. And there's a very simple test you can use to figure out whether, when the government's doing something, is it moral or not. And all you have to do is ask yourself, is the government doing something that, if you as an individual did, would be a crime? And that's what they're doing here. What they're doing is they're asking the government to point a gun at some people's heads, take their money, and give it to someone else. Now, if anyone else in this room tried to do that, we would all be arrested. And, you know, the police officer right here would do it. Now, thirdly, despite the statistics we heard, subsidized housing attracts crime. And there's no doubt about it. You can go look at all the statistics you want, but that's a fact. I used to live in Chicago near subsidized housing. And you walk through the neighborhoods, and it's very scary, and you risk your life in some of these neighborhoods. So,
and it's project-based subsidized housing.
Well,
the difference between that and the voucher, where you're blended in with regular community and there's peer pressure to up your standards instead of...
The point I want to make is... a lot of subsidized housing, and it's even included in the letter that we have, you'll have single-parent households. And when you have single-parent households, typically it's a mother raising children. There's not a father present. And you can look at the data and the statistics. Now, my sister was even, you know, a single-parent mother, and I don't want to speak badly about single-parent mothers yet, but you have more crime in single-parent households. And when families are subsidized by the government, and I've talked to women who are, and I've listened to women who are single who run single-parent households, okay, and the government will give them, you look at the numbers, the government gives them like up to $30,000, $40,000 a year. And if they do have a male member in the household, they do lose some of these subsidies, you see. So the government is providing incentives to basically to divide the American family, okay. And so, that's true. These are facts, okay? I'm just speaking facts.
I disagree
with that. Okay. And just final point is, you know, what is the tangible benefit to our community? And I don't think subsidized housing is going to provide a tangible benefit to the community as a whole. You will see property values in the area near there. They will go down. People do not like living next to subsidized housing. And
we don't like to live in subsidized housing. So you know.
Yeah. Anyway, those are my comments, and thank you very much.
Are there any other residents who would like to speak?
I didn't think I might have a chest. Hi, I'm Cheryl Golan, 251 Cherry Hill Trail, and I want to thank the council members and the mayor who have always been very diligent. We've been members of this community for 15 years. We moved in 15 years ago last weekend in Cherry Hill Trail and have loved living in Medina. We love the rural area. I know it very well. Mike, I think we're all reasonable people. I think we all love where we live. I think we can be respectful about this. And I think we all understand that there's a need. We've all been down and out. If we haven't been, you've just been lucky, and it might hit you. We understand that. Let's make it a win-win. I think it's possible to have a win here if we just are logical and reasonable at this. If we slow things down, I don't think it's going to be a win. Another part of me is I'm a mom. And almost a lot of you who have kids know me. I'm a coach. I've coached a lot of your kids. I'm starting the Wayside Mountain Bike Team, if you have any mountain bikers here. I'm a Sunday school teacher. I've been a Nordic ski coach. Everybody, all your kids know me. And I love kids. I took Mayor Weir, who I respect greatly, and she walked with me all along the property, all around, and it was muddy. And she didn't have any boots on. And it was a cold day. And we looked around there, and I just explained to her, we want the best for the kids. We've got to make sure that wherever we put them, that it's going to be winnable. We don't want this to fail. If this does go through, I'm just afraid. If I were a kid and I didn't have a place to play and I had a fence on three sides of me, and this is no disrespect whatsoever, Mayor Weir is doing everything she can. She's trying. She and I looked at them. She's like, maybe if we could push the fence out here, the kids would have more room to play. Because I told her, I said, Mayor Weir, the kids have got to play. I've got teenage boys now. I know it. We've had graffiti on our back wall, which I was talking to the police chief about. And they were wonderful about dealing with it. It's been great. I've gotten to know a lot of teenagers in our neighborhood about it. But to wrap all this up, we just want to make putting kids in an area that's got fences on three sides, and there's a bar, and a lot of times there's partying at the bar because my bedroom's on second floor, and I can hear it all, okay, in Cherry Hill. I'm afraid it's just going to be too much for those kids. How can kids resist it? That's why I'm starting a mountain bike team. I'm trying to get kids out of the basement. I'm trying to get kids in our neighborhoods out of the basement. But the low-income kids, I want to help them too. And I'll get them on bikes if I have to, but that isn't enough. We can't save all of them, okay? So we have to put them somewhere. I realize.
Put them in a big playpen and expect it to work.
I know it's a beautiful development. There's no discussion. I mean, it's beautiful. You guys are professional. Looks professionally done. It's a beautiful play area. But my kids haven't touched the swing sets since they've been 7 years old, okay? There's just swing sets there. There's not enough. You have teenagers. They don't have a way to get to their jobs. Hopefully a few of them are going to get jobs, right, that they can walk to. What are the rest going to do? They're right next to retail. I walk in Target, and a lot of times there's things that I would love to buy, and I can't afford to buy them. That's because I live in Cherry Hill Trail, which my husband likes to joke is the slums of Medina. I can't afford a lot of that stuff there. I can't afford those $4 coffees, okay? My goodness. We don't want to rush this. If we put it in there, and if it's going to be too much temptation, we got to make these kids, we have to make this winnable, guys. So let's all work together with some kind of a solution. I think there's a lot of talent in this room, and I think there's a lot of talent. I think some people would be willing to work and step up maybe onto planning commission committees and work together on this. Everybody that I've worked has been very professional. I'm especially, my boys want to be police officers now because they love the officers under his command, and they've learned all about high speed, you know, they've learned all kinds of things. So we're really good things. They have a lot of respect for police officers, which they should have, and we've always had very good encounters with your officers. And with Mayor Weir, she has always been responsive. When we had trouble with the loading docks, she was on the phone, and she had the staff call to Ryan Companies and make sure that they didn't do any late night deliveries. So they care about us. So let's work together. Let's work on a solution that's going to work. And let's make sure that this works, you guys. Let's do it well, because this is Medina. We can do it well. Thank you.
Anybody else? Anyone else interested in speaking?
I would say one more thing if I could.
Please come to the mic.
It's Linda Lake again. Sorry. I'm so passionate about this because I live it every day. And so I went through my resident handbook today, and if the rules in the handbook were followed, if somebody cared to enforce the rules in our community, then our community would be a lovely place to live. But if we don't have anybody in management to enforce the rules, and we're just told, call the police, call the police, call the police, and only the police...
Ma'am, I think the issues you're bringing up, you need to address with Jeff and Nick.
What I'm saying is, this is very similar to where I live.
Okay.
As far as, there's no, like she says, there's no place for the teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got kids wandering about, milling about, nothing to do, no supervision. And if management doesn't enforce that those children need to be supervised, or they need to be entertained or have some kind of activity, then you're going to be in a situation just like where we live. And can I just invite y'all to come over
yes,
and take a look
please.
At other Dominion properties and see what's going on? Because without that, I think you're missing a big part of the puzzle.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Any questions? I want to thank everybody for coming here tonight. We're holding the same open town hall forum tomorrow night at the same time. So if you have further questions or concerns, please come back at that point. Thank you for your time, and have a good evening.
I want to thank you very much for coming to, and I think the council has heard, and it's valuable that we do. And I know it's taken a large chunk of your evening on a lovely summer evening. Thank you. And we'll be here
tomorrow night to hear from more of you. So, many thanks. Thank you, Mayor. No, hopefully, give some consideration. I appreciate it. No, I'll say, I think it's important to get to know and talk to Marty. And I think in her heart of hearts, she feels that this is an issue that you can talk to make. Does it comply or not? I'm not saying I know all this, but I think I know staff to tax here.